Hi, this is John Udell. In the first installment of my new Conversations with Microsoft series, I got together with Chris Wilson. He's been involved with Internet Explorer and with web standards for over a decade. We talked about the history and evolution of IE, about Ajax, about ways of extending the browser, ranging from bookmarklets to Firefox extensions to plugins, and about the W3C's invitation to Chris to chair its new HTML working group. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good.
So the first thing I wanted to ask you is, where were you when you first heard the term Ajax, and what did you think when you realized what that meant? In other words, you mean DHTML and XML HTTP object?
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, when I first heard the term, when Jesse James Garrett actually wrote his article, I was back on the IE team. Again, I was off on the Avalon project, the Windows Presentation Foundation. Mm-hmm. For about 3 years, and I'd come back to the IE team, and it was sort of interesting because I think that he did a really good job of capturing this pattern and describing it in a way that got people realizing that it was a different way to build applications. And some people had been trying to do, you know, better, prettier things on the web, but they hadn't really gotten the idea that, oh, you can actually build it as a client-side application, you know, mm-hmm. that the client-server pairing is not really... doesn't have to be heavily server, and the client is just actually presenting static content.
Yes.
You can actually do this communication back and forth.
It's an interesting question as to why, given that the foundations of that method had been kicking around for close to 10 years.
Certainly one of the things was the feeling of, well, yeah, it's great that people are starting to use the stuff we shipped in 1998.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot more to it than that, too, on two fronts. One of them is just the interoperability of that, the ability to get it on different browsers, on different operating systems, different hardware platforms even, mm-hmm. and different devices has been a huge thing in whether it's really based on their market share or not. I think that that's an important mental thing for people to feel like they're not totally shutting out their clients and locking them into a particular platform or browser or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Even more than that, I think there's been a big move toward... I was back at the Ajax Experience Conference in Boston mm-hmm. a few months back,
mm-hmm.
and one of the Ajaxian guys, I think it was Ben Galbraith, said something like, Web 2.0 and Ajax is really about caring about the quality of user experience. And that really kind of resonated with me because, you know, the cool thing about Flickr, for example, is not that they use this neat client-side stuff, or even that it's really responsive, because frankly, I have a very responsive desktop photo management app. It's just that they cared about the overall experience of how I use their site and how I interact with my friends and my contacts mm-hmm. on Flickr as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really exciting about it to me.
I was checking, and it looks as though the early specs that you were involved with include, I think it was level 1 and 2 DOM, and at least one or two things related to CSS. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I think the first standard that I really got involved with was probably the HTML spec, circa HTML 3.2, probably.
Okay.
Can't exactly remember when I was on the HTML working group now that I come to that. But the CSS working group, I was kind of one of the charter members of the actual working group. Really, it sort of came about because I was spending a lot of time talking back and forth with Haukan Lee, who was at the W3C at the time,
mm-hmm.
and Bert Quast, who still is at the W3C. And about CSS and what the specs should be. And then the Netscape guys started getting interesting, and Vitor Aparel wanted to join in. We're sort of, okay, great, let's make a working group, and we'll work on the spec together. That's probably the one that I spent far and away the most time in. But then I took over the browser side of the DOM working group as well and was in for the DOM level 1 and a bunch of the DOM level 2 work.
Is it surprising to you that CSS has turned out to be as problematic as it has turned out to be? I remember, in fact, we were probably at the same PDC. In fact, we were probably in the same room, I'm guessing. I think it was the 96 PDC was the one that was sort of called the Internet PDC.
Mm-hmm.
And Haukan Lee was there in a breakout session talking about CSS.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there?
I don't think I was, actually. Maybe. I can't remember the first PDC that I went to.
So for what it's worth, it was, I've told this story before, it was kind of an odd thing because I had the impression that it seemed like a lot of the folks there were from Microsoft and they were all sort of listening very politely, but I just got this feeling that they were sitting there going, style sheets, yeah, been there, done that, right? You know, and even then, it was a 10-year-old thing. And the, you know, the new thing was let's re-implement this for the web. Well, great. Who would have thought that 10 years later it would be this thorn in everyone's side? I mean, it's kind of, I'm not sure I understand how that happened.
Well, I think that part of it really was that at the time, you know, when we shipped IE3, I was the reason why we had any CSS support in there at all. Like when we started planning for IE3, mm-hmm. my management came to me and said, "Oh, we think we want you to do this frame set work," because I was a developer on the team. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, you know, that's great, and yeah, we should totally do the frame set stuff, but I'd really like to work on the CSS stuff. I think it'd be a great competitive feature, and it would give this really cool ability to mark up your content and give it really rich styling and have that separate from the semantics of the content."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I managed to convince my manager to let me do it. But then when we started planning out IE4, we actually had an entire HTML engine replacement between IE3 and IE4.
Mm-hmm.
There was a different team off in another building that was building this engine that we ended up dropping in, the Trident engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I went and gave a presentation about all the style sheet work that I'd done in IE3 to the team, to the new team, you know, the team that was coming in and kind of taking over my team's job. And they were really depressed, actually, by how much style sheet work I'd done and how much they were going to have to do to make sure that from IE3 to IE4 was an improvement, not a degradation in the mm-hmm. style sheet amounts.
Or at least parity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, at least parity and preferably more than that. So that's why I actually joined the IE4 team to work on the style sheet implementation. But the big thing, of course, about IE4 was also the interactivity and
mm-hmm.
the programmability, and that was really the first release where you could really look at that and understand how we got to this Web 2.0 world of everything's programmable and the client interface is really, it's a surface you can do anything with. It's not just this HTML static page that you can change some form fields on.
Oh, absolutely. The ingredients were all there, and not long after that, we saw the flowering of some incredible early Ajax stuff. In particular, I remember the company's name was Halfbrain,
mm-hmm.
who had this awesome spreadsheet thing. So in any event, speaking of Trident, there are an awful lot of people who have seemed to come to the conclusion that that thing ought to have just reached the end of its life at this point and be retired and replaced. I know you get that a lot. What's your thinking about that?
I do, in fact. You know, it's kind of interesting and sort of frustrating to me because I think I know more than almost anyone else about the sort of quality of code that's in Trident and the different code modules that's in there. Certainly some of the dev leads on our team know considerably more than I do in detail, but at a high level, Trident isn't really our problem. Our problem is and has been for many, many years, compatibility. And IE7 sort of underscored that for us because we went in and we did a whole bunch of changes that were all standards improvement changes. And we actually broke a ton of pages
mm-hmm.
when we did this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because people were expecting us to have the wrong behavior,
right.
even under this strict doc type switch.
Right.
And I think you can look at Trident at any part of it and say, oh, well, it doesn't do the right thing for floating content, for example.
Yeah.
I know we still have some bugs around how we handle the CSS float property. The problem is we can't really change it without breaking a bunch of web pages in the way that they render today. So anything that we do has to have sort of this ability to say, you know what, I really do want the standards behavior because I didn't test my content and build it for IE6 and
right.
expect that it's going to work that way forever.
Right.
But the Trident engine itself actually has some incredibly forward-looking features in it. The way that the code was architected was very flexible, and there are some things that need to be replaced and tweaked architecturally, not just at the end, but really it's not a question of, hey, let's throw out the whole system and start over, because some of the system, the parts of the system and a lot of the bones of the system really are very solid, and I wouldn't...
And it has evolved over time?
It absolutely has evolved over time. I mean, the IE5 system was actually considerably different from the IE4 system.
Mm-hmm.
There's this whole concept of has layout that's gotten a lot of press that we've actually written an article or two about.
Yeah, I don't understand that yet, but I've run into it.
Well, it's kind of an interesting concept, and I think that in general, at some level, you have to have that sort of concept anywhere in any layout system, because it basically says, I am an element that knows how to lay out myself and all of my children.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need anybody above me to tell me how to do it. I know I have this information and everything that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is we sort of overuse it in our system today, which is one of the reasons why you run into problems with it a lot. And there are some restrictions on it that cause problems, like floating elements can't actually push through these layout boundaries. But the real kicker is that in IE4, we actually had the whole has-layout concept hard-coded into the system, like either a particular type of element had layout or didn't have layout. And you couldn't change it over time, you couldn't modify it at all, and you really couldn't have done the sort of hacks to fix it up, to fix up has layout problems or work around them that you can do today. So I think that we obviously need to move a little further in the direction where it doesn't cause problems, but it's not actually the fundamental infrastructure that's totally broken there. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the next couple rounds of IE impress people or don't, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. I think, personally, they'll be pretty exciting.
I've seen a number of comments to the effect that basically people are saying, well, we don't exactly know where you're taking this thing. We know that you've got a list of to-do items around fixing this, that, and the other standards-related issue. But what's the big plan? That's the one of the things that I see people writing about and asking for.
There's always an interesting challenge for us to be totally open about what we're doing, just because I think we get put under a microscope by just about everyone on it. And certainly the worst thing is that people start relying on things we haven't even shipped yet.
Yeah.
And that means we can't cut anything, among other things, because we're creating liability for ourselves. But I think the general themes of where we're going really is, I'll say back in 2001 when IE6 shipped, we kind of looked at the platform that we'd built that was already capable of doing all these Ajax things, and there wasn't a whole lot of adoption of it. Like, nobody was really building the rich, sexy apps you can go and find on the web today. And because of that, we started figuring out, well, what do we really want to offer people in a network-enabled client platform? And that's when we went off and started building the Avalon platform. And then we had a bunch of security problems that started cropping up around the same time. And that took a lot of our attention away from advancing the web platform and instead focusing on making our platform extremely secure. And, of course, I don't think that's ever done, but certainly we've made some big strides towards that.
So it's interesting that you say that. From my perspective, at the time that I first heard about Avalon, it very much felt like, well, it was, frankly, a retreat from the web in some sense. But the point that you've made, I think, is worth listening to, which is that at the time, there wasn't the positive feedback coming to do that work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who knew that the Ajax revolution was 3 years around the corner?
Exactly. I mean, there were certainly some early kind of WebOS and really rich web applications that were being built at the time. Like Halfbrain is a good example of one, actually.
Yeah.
But they weren't really successful in the longer term and kind of got hit by the whole .com crash as well. But, after we sort of got past that, we had to start figuring out, what do we really need to do now? Like, when I rejoined the IE team several years ago, it was kind of, where are we and what do we need to do? And the first thing, of course, was, well, we have a ton of problems that people are just banging their heads against every single day. We need to start fixing those. And we fixed a whole bunch of them in IE7. We certainly need to fix more of them, and we're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to just take the things off the list that people say, like, floating doesn't work properly or whatever. And I think that fixing a bunch of those standards issues, particularly around CSS and layout issues, is going to be a huge part of what we do. But the second part, of course, is around programmability. And there's two parts to this. One of them is making the document object model really interoperable across platforms as much as it possibly can be to the level that it's spec'd, And fixing the problems with using IE today and using IE's DOM today. So the eventing model, for example, really doesn't match what the DOM says it was, says it should be, because we implemented our event model long before there was a DOM spec that said this is how eventing should work.
Right.
There's also a bunch of things that I think the working groups at the W3C that got created a year or so ago, the Web API Working Group and the Web App Formats Working Group, are building that are also really exciting around providing additional APIs for Ajax authors to use, giving you things like a local store that you can store information in.
Yes.
And some of these things, like local store, is a really interesting one because that's another thing that we actually shipped many years ago. I think it was an IE5.5. It might have been an IE6. We built this user data control.
Oh, yeah, I know it, yeah.
gives you the ability to store data locally and get back name value pairs and all this really interesting Ajax-y functionality, although I will point out that it fundamentally is kind of crippled just because it has a very low amount of memory that it can use on the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to be storing all of your photos in it or anything.
But that wouldn't be the point.
No,
yeah.
It certainly wouldn't, but like doing a local cache for a webmail client or something like that could be really interesting.
Yeah. So there's a set of things which don't qualify as standards in the sense of the things that we've been talking about so far here, mm-hmm. but that I find myself increasingly thinking about. And so, well, to take one, it might seem like a trivial example, but I actually think it isn't. The language around right-click, save as, mm-hmm. I have discovered recently, is a real impediment to people understanding some incredibly fundamental things. The example is, my wife is an artist, and she frequently has to exchange these large TIFF files with galleries or stores. So, of course, I always wind up being recruited into these things. And a couple of times, I blundered into this and said, well, I'll fix this for you. I'm so smart. What I'm going to do is show you how to upload this file onto the web, and then all you need to do is send them the URL. Won't that be cool? That way, you know, no mailbox issues and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And this is clearly the superior strategy, right? Of course. But I had to admit that there was still unhappiness emanating from my wife's studio in my direction after these solutions that I gave her. And I really had to stop and think about, finally, what was going on. And what was going on is that these people would receive these URLs from her pointing to this upload location that I had given her, and they didn't know what to do with them. And a lot of the time, what would happen is that they would click on them and commence to load into memory a 20 megabyte TIFF file over the web, which was really quite an unpleasant experience for them. Mm-hmm. And they would be unhappy, and she would be unhappy, and thus, you know, I would share in the unhappiness.
I can understand that.
And I looked at what was going on here, and I realized, you know, it's a completely unconscious reflex for me to do right-click, save as. And number one, I think there's a bunch of people who haven't discovered right-click. But the ones that have, and I went and I looked, right? I looked at IE and Safari and Firefox, and I realized it's all different, right? The concept of saving something from the web to your disk, the UI around that concept has not become even a very good de facto standard.
Yeah.
So that's one example, right? And so there's a question there about how, I don't know. I mean, this doesn't fall under the purview of the kind of things that standards groups generally are chartered to do, right? We tend to worry about protocols and formats and things like that. But this is really kind of crucial stuff. So that's one. And then related is this set of things, starting with bookmarklets and working up the ladder to things like Firefox extensions and GreaseMonkey extensions and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so this has been remarkably liberating in my experience over the last few years. And again, it's the kind of thing recently that I've got to thinking about. First of all, if you agree, and you might not, that this is a good thing and it's useful and productive, how would we think about making that stuff something that both from a developer point of view, but also from a user point of view, feels like a reliably consistent kind of thing that they can understand?
One of the other things that we really are working very hard on coming up with a long-term strategy for is, and it kind of encompasses both of the examples you just gave, not so much just doing file upload or file download, but the general theme of how your computer interacts with the rest of the network,
mm-hmm.
how you deal with local resources mm-hmm. versus remote resources.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I find myself wanting to do a lot is managing calendar dates across web pages and my Outlook calendar, because my Outlook calendar, frankly, is kind of the center of my entire world,
mm-hmm.
and it synchronizes to my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got a brand new phone, actually, that automatically synchronizes it constantly and puts all my email on it as well. But that's really just an extension, then, of this desktop experience to me.
Yeah.
You can see the theme in a bunch of different places. The microformats work is really just a way to expand what can be semantically marked up content on the web and then give you the ability to add that to your computer, is sort of like the live clipboard demo that the Ray Ozzie did a while ago
mm-hmm.
was exactly that. It was a way to sort of enhance the connection between the web and your computer and what you might be doing on your computer locally.
Interestingly, it was actually also about web to web.
Yes, absolutely. It actually goes both directions.
Yes.
And that also means you can sort of skip the middle step and go directly web to web, which
yeah.
is really handy.
Yeah.
The Firefox extension story is one that's been really interesting for us to watch from IE, because, you know, we've always had this extremely powerful extensibility mechanism set for IE. One of those is the ability to write user plugins, in mm-hmm. fact. Mm-hmm. The problem is they're really hard to do. You have to know COM, and you have to, you know, be able to write COM code, and you have to write GDI code and all mm-hmm. these other things that mm-hmm. if you're not a hardcore programmer, you probably aren't going to be able to figure it out well enough in order to do it.
Yeah.
And there are certainly some people out there already, some companies that will build one for you. They'll build a toolbar for you and just have it plugged to whatever web service you want.
Right.
But that is going to cost you one way or another. I think that the concern that I still end up having is one around defining what the security of those plugins.
No kidding. I mean, it's obviously, you know, that's an obvious reason why the technology didn't develop in your world. You were busy repairing a justifiably tarnished security reputation. And so that was, it would have been, you know, a couple of years ago, I think, completely unthinkable.
Yeah.
It's still not an easy call now. But still, I mean, it
Oh, that's not a reason not to look at it at all.
Yeah.
I think that I look in the pro column and there's this idea that, wow, the bar for writing a Firefox extension is actually fairly low.
Yes.
If you're a serious Ajax web developer already, writing a Firefox add-in won't take you a ton of time to learn how to do, or at least a very basic one. It's not going to take you a ton of time.
And you can know not very much at all and be successful doing a GreaseMonkey extension.
You can, and that's where I start getting a little bit worried, because that's when you have the potential to accidentally open up security problems.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those are not even the potential for somebody writing one of these to do something malicious, right? To write an add-in that is watching your keystrokes or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but just to do something accidental that's wrong. Like there was the whole, about a year and a half ago, GreaseMonkey itself ended up accidentally doing something that basically exposed this domain unrestricted XML HTTP request to all.
I remember that. I remember that very well.
Purely a mistake, not something that, you know, not something that the author should be beaten for or anything, but you know, it was a bad security hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the real concern, of course, that we also have is the model that the Firefox guys have, the Mozilla team has for their add-ons, is one where all add-ons basically must go to add-ons.mozilla.org, and they get presumably code reviewed, and people look through them to make sure they're not doing anything bad around privacy or whatever. I don't think we can be the central clearinghouse of all plugins and be responsible for them at Microsoft, or we would probably get in some sort of trouble for that, I'd imagine.
Hmm.
And we just have sort of a different security model. I actually had an interesting discussion with one of the Mozilla board members, actually, about 9 months ago, I guess. We had a Microsoft Technology Summit here, and we had this back and forth about the security model. And I said, well, you know, for us, for plugins and extensions, we've always had this model of cryptographic signing and publisher verification.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So you can tell who wrote this add-in. Signed, we verify the signature, you can check the certificate, et cetera, et cetera. But that model wasn't one that they were really happy with, because they didn't like the fact that anybody could write one of these and all you could really tell was that somebody wrote it in particular. But for my mom, on the other hand, her model is basically going to be, if Charles Schwab signed it, she's going to expect that it's good and it's not going to troll her hard drive for interesting things or watch her credit card information or whatever. It'll be interesting to settle out a lot of those security questions, and I think fundamentally there will be different models on the web for how these interact and how these systems plug together.
Mm-hmm. The problem there is that we get back to this issue of having different names for save as, you know, save target, save link, save this, save that, right? But you're right. If for legitimate reasons people choose different models, fundamentally, you know, different approaches to security that are kind of incompatible, it's actually extremely difficult to paper over the differences and to create a unified experience. That's a real problem.
Exactly. And, I mean, even to the level of, you know, I've spent some time using a Macintosh, and I've obviously spent a fair amount of time using Windows systems. Just the little differences between them are enough to really, you know, require a rethinking of how I'm interacting with my computer.
Mm-hmm. Like,
you know, not consistently having a right-click properties section, or, you know, the scroll bar being a little different in how it works and things like that. It's just, it is a very different user experience, and I think you'll find those offered differently. But I do think enhancing that sort of computer-to-web interface and making that smoother is one of the critical things we need to do in the next round of advancing the web. Certainly, I look at Flickr, you know, a service that I actually use quite a bit, and wow, I never use their web interface for uploading pictures anymore. Like, I installed the Win32 app, I drag stuff, I drop it, I click OK, and I'm done.
Right.
Doing that through the web interface would be considerably more difficult for good reason in a lot of cases, because, you know, I don't want arbitrary web pages to be able to grab files off of my hard drive.
Right.
But at the same time, for Flickr, when I tell it to, and I know that I'm, you know, uploading this set of pictures that I just dragged and dropped into it, I should be okay with that.
Yeah. It's also very interesting how Flickr, I think, quite adroitly straddles the rich client, thin client.
They absolutely do, yes.
For example, yeah, you know, where appropriate, drop in this organizer thing, this Flash component, because in that particular interaction, it really is critical to have that level of rich experience. But it's encapsulated, you know, and then we're very pragmatic about it. You know, in fact, I think they kind of backed off at some point from a more aggressive use of Flash and are using it, you know, in just these judicious kind of ways, which I think is a real lesson to everyone.
Exactly. I think they're one of the examples I like to point at, just because they have what I feel is kind of a good scalable experience. Like, if all I want to get is, you know, a set of pictures displaying on the screen, I can get that. If I want to get this really rich organizer, I can get that too. And I use both of those on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So before I forget, someone could, in fact, I think someone has done a Grease Monkey-like thing for Explorer.
There have actually been a couple of Grease Monkey-like. There's one that was Grease Monk IE, although that, I think, kind of faded away. The one that was the most current that I can recall off the top of my head was Trixie.
Yeah. So have you had a look at that thing? What's your impression of it?
Oh, yeah. Actually, after Trixie, there was one called Turnabout by Reify Software.
Okay.
And that's the most recent one, actually, and the most full-featured one. If you go to Reify Soft, reifysoft.com, it was kind of interesting for two reasons. One, it's very compatible with Grease Monkey.
With user scripts, okay.
In fact, they prepackage half a dozen scripts with it that are Grease Monkey scripts that are actually tweaked to be cross-platform, so cross-browser, I should say.
Okay.
So they'll work in Grease Monkey, like BookBurrow is the big one, of course. Works in Firefox, works in IE as well with Turnabout installed.
Okay.
The other thing that was really interesting about what the Turnabout guys did was they explicitly said, oh, you know what? There's a security problem with these things. Like, if you install a JavaScript into this Grease Monkey-like thing, it has access to basically anything. I mean, it sits there, and it can watch any web page, and it can communicate with any web server.
Mm-hmm.
That's really dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So the default version of Turnabout that gets installed doesn't allow you to install any additional scripts. It only has the half dozen or so that it ships with. They have a different version that's the pro version that lets you run any of them. It's not actually a for-profit thing or anything. It's just that's the big difference between pro and normal is whether you get to install other scripts or not. But they do pop up these dialogues that very clearly say, this causes a security problem, make sure you trust the script, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, the shoot-yourself-in-the-foot version.
Pretty much, yeah. And, you know, it really is. If you know where you're getting it from, or if you know, if you've actually code-reviewed it, great, you know, then you're good. It should be safe. But Grease Monkey in general is that pattern of having these scripts that function against web pages is a really great, lightweight way to expand your browsing experience, right? I mean, bookmarklets are kind of the same thing. They're certainly, as you put it, they're on the same spectrum.
Okay, great. Well, I'll have a look at Turnabout then, because there's some stuff that I've been doing in Firefox space that I want to be more than just this niche thing that's only for the subset of the subset, right?
Yep.
So I'll have a look at that. I wanted to talk a little bit about your possible new involvement with the HTML working group. And so I read a bunch about this recently, and I gather that it's still the case that you haven't exactly decided whether or not to do this. It's still being discussed. Is that right? But you were invited to chair the new HTML working group.
You know, I was originally approached by one of the W3C guys, and you know, we'd been talking. I went to them, and as a number of other people did, I said, you know, we really need a new HTML working group to evolve HTML 4.01 and XHTML 1.1 together. And they kind of came back and said, well, you know, you're right. It's a lot of people have been saying this. It's time to do this. And we were kind of thinking that you'd be a good chair for that. And I, at the time, I kind of chuckled and said, yeah, I think I'm a little too busy for that, or something to that effect. Because I do know it's going to take a fairly large involvement of time. And after a while, you know, I thought about it some more, and I kept coming back to the fact that I couldn't come up with somebody that I really wanted in that chair that I thought would be good at evolving HTML and taking it in this direction that kind of, I think that there's a lot of people out there who have been saying the W3C has not been doing a great job at being stewards of the HTML specification, in effect.
Certainly the folks who formed the WebWG, the Web Hypertext Application Technology, is that the right acronym?
The WebWG, yeah. The Web Hypertext Application Technology Working Group.
That was obviously, that obviously showed what the level of frustration was and that
absolutely.
People wanted to move forward.
And I think that, you know, I've said for a long time, those guys, their original goals, for the most part, I completely agree with.
Mm-hmm.
The big problem that I have with the What Working Group, because I was asked personally to join at one point and I had to decline, and the big reason was patent policy. You know, there is no perfect patent policy, and certainly all patent problems are not going to be resolved, but when you are trying to build specifications that you want to be free and open for everyone to use, everyone to implement, you have to be very, very careful about where the contributions to those specs come from and make sure that everyone who's contributing them is agreeing to the same policy for intellectual property. And that's one thing that I think the W3C, a few years ago, they finally recognized that this was a huge, huge problem. We had all been operating in this nice utopian world where, you know, we all just met and we made some specs and it was great, but we started getting problems with those specs. And I don't know that any of them would have been directly prevented, any of the lawsuits would have been prevented or anything by the current patent policy, but it does make it very clear what we're getting into when we do this together.
So how would you characterize the difference between the What Working Groups and the W3's patent policies?
The What Working Group doesn't really have one. I think they have one in spirit, certainly. And you know, I live in this interesting world where I totally agree with their open spirit. And at the same time, I have to look at the fact that I have been in depositions before, and I don't really want to be there again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a simple reality of the patent world and the IP world in general.
I highlighted one comment from your blog posting that was reviewing this question of you joining that board, and you said, where is it? Oh, you said that you think that the charter for the new HTML working group represents not a compromise between the W3C and the WhatWG, but most of the original goals of the WhatWG inside the W3C.
Yep. Yeah, I think when I look at the goals that the HTML working group that's developed XHTML2 has had for the last few years, and the goals that the What Working Group has had, and what they've been delivering on with their work on what they call HTML5, I can clearly say that the goals that the What Working Group had of evolving HTML sort of in place so that you could continue to use it, and there wasn't this huge shift where, you know, you had to, one day, in order to get new features, you had to write this content that simply wasn't going to work on any of the browsers that were out there yesterday.
Yeah.
That's a great goal. That's exactly the way that I would like to see us move the web forward, always keeping in mind how this is going to work in place when you start deploying this in a client like IE and also in a website or a web service.
Right. I recall a conversation with Brendan Eich about that stuff. It's been a while now, but it seemed that there was also an interest in, if you will, kind of rehabilitating some older things that had kind of just fallen by the wayside. In particular, the plugin API was something that he was interested in kind of breathing new life into. And I've kind of lost track of what's gone on or not gone on with that. What do you think about that?
It depends which plugin API. The Netscape plugin API, or
that, for example, was something that just needed to be dusted off and modernized and moved forward.
There's certainly a lot of potential there. I think that the ability to extend the platform in a little bit more confined circumstances, I would encourage, frankly. Like, I don't think that every website needs to have ActiveX controls on it, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that clearly, you know, we recognized very early on with IE that we didn't want to limit it just to what we implemented. And that's why we added ActiveX to begin with, and why we pushed in the HTML4 spec to have an object tag that could be used for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was one of the Mozilla guys, it might have been one of the Opera guys, said to me a while ago, because I said something about the object tag, and they're like, oh, but just everybody associates that with ActiveX.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that there's a perception issue there that we may need to have a new tag simply so that people don't associate it with ActiveX. But I think that having sort of this way to plug in extensible systems, and even, I mean, Flash is a great example. Flash
yes.
uses this to get embedded in,
yes.
in web pages today.
Yes.
I think that we absolutely have to have that. And if it looks somewhat different from what it does today, I don't think that's necessarily bad as long as we're doing it for good reason.
And what do you think ought to happen on the forms front? I know that that was a key part of the what it is a key part of the what WG initiative,
and
sort of
yes.
in distinction to X forms or in parallel to it.
It's kind of interesting because I think there are several pieces to forms that really they need to be addressed, and they need to be addressed both together and separately is sort of the problem. One of them, really, web forms really takes on this idea of validation and making sure that the input to your forms can be validated. And I think that's absolutely critical. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many times where I've hit submit on a form and it comes back and says, oh, no, you need to fill out this part of it, or mm-hmm. that's not a real credit card number or whatever. That's not a real date. And I think that web forms actually does a pretty good job at that. I think XForms starts taking on a client-server interaction that I'm personally not as concerned about, but I want to listen to other people and see how important they think it is to do that. I think there's also a third part, which is just expanding the control set, in effect. I mean, geez, there's no combo box
right.
on the web today.
Right.
And while I've had to write one using an input control and faking up a drop-down box, and it's not pretty. So I think there you start seeing the overlap with things like Zool, where you really do want a better forms package as well, you know, a better mm-hmm. controls package to use in forms. But for both, for all three of these, actually, one of the sort of tenets of the What Working Group, I think, really does hold true, which is you have to pay attention to how it's going to degrade in an old system.
Yeah.
You know, if suddenly I click on a link to fill out a form and half of the form controls simply don't show up.
Yeah.
In the page, that's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And I'd rather make the markup slightly less intuitive to make sure that it's going to work well even in older browsers for a while.
Yeah. Well, just to circle back then, I guess I'm not certain now. Have you decided that you will be the chair of this group? Or are you still deciding? What's the?
No, I mean, I think that I was asked, and I said that I would find out how to make time for it.
Okay.
I'm still a little daunted, frankly, at how big a task it's going to be.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to be an interesting one, and if I could look at somebody who I think clearly sees both sides of the sort of schism that's happened between the W3C and the What Working Group, and
yeah.
could bridge that,
yeah.
at least as well as I hope that I can, well, I'd be happy for them to take the job, but at the same time, I don't, or at least I don't see anyone who could do that who really wants to do it more than I do. So I think
that, well, that's a good sign.
Yeah, I suppose.
I
didn't use the right invective in there.
You know, I don't mean it's a good sign that there's no one else. I just mean it's a good sign that it's something you really want to do. I think that's.
I think it needs to happen.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly it needs to happen. And if that means that I should be the one to do it, great. It's actually going to be kind of challenging for me just because I do feel pretty strongly about the separation between being a chair and a representative, and I'm not sure if I'm going to have to find somebody else on the IE team who can be the representative who sort of is a little more representative of Microsoft's interests, because I think as chair, I have to be a lot more objective than that.
Right.
At the same time, I think that really a lot of the goals, there really won't be that much disagreement on. My biggest concerns about the work that we have to do is more, you know, trying to leverage a lot of work of the work that's already been done by people like the What Working Group, but protecting the IP policy of the W3C at the same time.
Okay. I have no further questions, but I want to invite you to toss in anything here that you think maybe should have come up and didn't.
You know, we've covered a whole lot of ground. I think that the interesting part for me really is what the future holds. It's going to be a really... It will continue to be defined by what web developers and users really want to do and want to see
yeah.
in the platform. I think we've certainly got a long list, but we are certainly attacking it pretty fast.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
See you.